Hi, it's Wednesday afternoon, and I don't have anybody yet for the Parsha this week, for some reason, but I do have someone for the Haftorah, and so I'm going to do the Haftorah now, of Parsha Zohar, of course, and I want to thank our sponsors, which is Mr. and Mrs. Shua Beer. That's all last week, and actually today, that's Zali and Shua Beer, were sponsoring this. Maybe somebody will step forward for the Parsha, I don't know, and we got Purim stuff coming up. Obviously, it's a packed week. this Haftorah is probably the most famous because it's the story of King Saul and Samuel and Agag, right? We all know that. The sin of King Saul, which cost him his melucha. Now, so the story, you know. The question that strikes me this year, I never was really Mayan in, was why did Saul have pity on Agag? That makes no sense to me, right? And for some reason, it's not covered by most of the Mefarshim. It's interesting in that regard. We know the story. Shmuel tells Saul that Hashem said, wipe out Amalek. And they did. Doesn't it say, like, they killed everybody, even animals? I mean, they really went Old Testament on them. Vayach Saul Samolik, Mechavilah Boach Ashur Hashal Pinim Mitzrayim. And it sounds like they killed everyone. I think later on it says something like that. So, because Shmuel said, I want, you know, you should go Old Testament on them. Shmuel says, Leich v'kisa amolik v'achramtim es kosher hem v'lo sachmo lov ish arisha olo agyonik mishar et seh migom lechamart. In other words, no survivors. That's a pretty, pretty Old Testament kind of way of going at things. So this is the idea of Mechiyas Samolik. No prisoners. And so Saul does that, as we all know. I know you know the story. But for some reason, he leaves the head guy. And it's not like the head guy was a tzaddik, because when Shmuel kills him, as you know, at the end of the story, what does Shmuel say, Kasher? Tishkal noshim karbecha kain tishkal minoshim imecha. That, you know, your sword has made so many other women childless. So now it's your turn for your mother to become childless. Famous line. And he does it, kills him. As you know. So, how come Saul didn't? I mean, if you're telling me that he, like, really went full bore on them, I mean, think about that. That's killed men, women, children. Even Saul had issues with that. He said, Vayor Banachal. I think many know that famous Gemara, that he started talking Nachal Egla Rufa. He said, Egla Rufa, makes such a big deal about the death of one person. Here, tell me to kill a mass killing. But he did it. He did it. I'm not saying he felt good about it, but he did it. So of all the people he leaves alive, it's the head of Hamas. You understand? It's Sinwar. It's Agag. Melech Amalek. There is some, you know, you'll find. So my question is, what's bothering me is why? I mean, if Israel could, they would kill Sinwar. He's the guy that launched the massacre on October 7th, deliberately. And Shmuel said the same thing about Agag. He said, Kasher Tishkal Nashim Karbecha. Your sword has made many women childless, which means Agag killed a lot of people who were young. They had mothers. So he was the real son of a gun. So if I'm King Saul and I give my soldiers these bloody orders because a Navi said this name of Hashem, so in other words, this trumps any kind of, regular feelings of mercy. It's a little hard for us to understand, but nevertheless, that's the story. And then you leave the king alive? And I look in the Mikra's Gedolos, and they don't really talk about it, which is so interesting to me. Because doesn't it stare you in the face? Now, as it happens, the Barbanel says, he spared him because he's tall, dark, and handsome. That's an old notion from long ago. I mean, if I knew a mass murderer or a murderer, it was good looking, big deal. Pretty boy Floyd. You know, why would I care? The truth is, excuse me. The truth is, the Barbanel didn't really get this on his own. I mean, Josephus says that. You know, Josephus has, which is written in the, before the Mishnah, right? Josephus says the whole story of the Bible. That's his book, Antiquities of the Jews. It's a paraphrase of the Bible. And he's got the story of King Saul and all the rest of it. And he says that, you know, when the undertaking succeeded, he said upon the cities, this is about Saul. I'll repeat, this is written long before the Gemara. That he destroyed them all, and when, according as God had foretold, he set upon the cities the Amalekites, he besieged them, he took them by force, partly by warlike machines. I mean, I don't know where you get that from. This Josephus talking. Partly by mines dug underground, partly by building walls on the outside. In other words, some they starved with famine, some they gained by other methods. And after he betook himself to slay them, women and children, and thought that he did not therein act barbarously or inhumanely, first because they were enemies who he thus treated, and second of all, they were done by the command of God, who is dangerous not to obey. So I get that. It's not a pretty picture. I mean, when it said they killed all these people, the Haftorah doesn't really go into how that happened. But if you think about it, that's a bloody business. You know, community after community, children after children. But he did it. And then Josephus says, he also took Agag, the king of the enemies, captive. The beauty and tallness of those his body admired so much, he thought worthy of preservation. That's where the Barbanel gets it from. He was Tovas Mareh. I mean, I'm sure of that. Anyway, does that make sense? Perhaps it's an old-fashioned notion from the ancient world. If somebody was tall, dark, and handsome, that itself, you know, was an object of admiration or something like that. Certainly not a Middle Eastern notion. Maybe a Greek notion. And, you know, I know there's these modern Mefarshim, these guys in Israel, who, you know, now there's a whole Kippah Struvah movement in Tanakh. I mean, really, I don't keep track of all them. I know one or two. You know, they read all these essays and books and things on different parts of the Tanakh, which is great. It's fine with me. But they're not the classical Mefarshim. And they give modernistic type answers. I never liked it too much. So you end up with a funny, and the Al-Sheikh says something weird. You know, he says that the Shaul misunderstood the sentence. It's a Vikisa Samolik Vachremtim is called Shalov Lo Sachmo Love. Then Behemis Neish Arisha Meolad Yoni. So in other words, he thought that Hashem said, you know, the first part, and Shmuel said the second part. doesn't make much sense to me. The best thing I can come up it's a hard parsha. It's so striking because it's the middle of the Gaza War, when the state of Israel is being accused of being like Shaul, and they're not. They're certainly not going after Ish V'Isha and Behemoth and all the rest of it. You know, I don't have to give a whole defense over here. The bottom line is the Israeli army is not out to go kill men, women, children. It does happen that people get killed, but that's the fault of Hamas, because they're using them as human shields deliberately in order to bring condemnation on Israel. It's a very successful move. It's very ruthless when you use your own people, you know, that way, but that's what they're doing. I'll say again, it works. So, I mean, they can kill anybody they want. Nothing happens. If Israel ever killed one person deliberately, or one baby deliberately, the whole world would boycott Israel. They don't boycott the Hamas or the Arabs in general, but they would boycott Israel. But Israel hasn't done that, right? They haven't done that. So it's not the same thing. And yet, we have these interesting images of having pity on Sinwars over here. Vayachmol, that's the language it mentions. Vayachmol, that he had mercy, chemla. Why would he have mercy on on Agag. I'll tell you again, I don't like the part that he was tall, dark, and handsome. That doesn't make sense to me. So, and it is true, maybe in the old days, a king was treated differently, but we have many cases in the Tanakh where enemy kings were killed by the victors. And this story is paralleled in the book of Melachim by the story of Achav and Ben-Hadad, where the Syrian king invades Israel, kills a lot of people, and then, without going into the details, gets captured by Achav, and Achav has pity on him and lets him go. You can't say the same thing over here, because in the case of Achav, he was releasing the enemy king to go back to his own kingdom. Here, that kingdom has been exterminated by Agag. You know what I mean? There's nobody to go back to. So how is it working out that, you know, he had pity? It's called Vayachem Olo. I would ordinarily say, if I want to be modernistic about it, me, myself, and I, that what was going on was that the biggest torture you can inflict on Agag is to leave him alive. If you had a whole country, if you had a whole country that you were ruling, and that country got all wiped out, which is a terrible thing, right? It wasn't a Moloch when that happened. And then there's their leader. I mean, he's got no flock anymore. He's got no followers. Like, what do you do? And if he does escape, he would spend the rest of his life trying to get revenge. I don't blame him. So, I guess, you know, in a modernistic kind of way, you say, they wiped out his whole country, including his own family and all the rest of it. Again, I don't think we think through all the cruelty involved. But leave the guy alive, that's almost like a torture of its own. And you could sort of defend that thesis. Because what does Agag say to Shmuel? Achein sar mar hamavis. The bitterness of death has departed, which is always hard for people to understand what exactly is going there. All the mafarshim are, you know, variegated on that particular phrase. But the plain meaning is, Achein sar mar hamavis, that the bitterness of death has been removed. Meaning, if my whole family was killed, and my whole city and kingdom was killed, the whole one, they're all left, then I don't want to live. In other words, it doesn't mean anything to me anymore. Right? Sar mar hamavis. You know, what you've done to me, you know, makes it like the pain of death is gone. I want to join them in the other world. And here King Saul says, no, I'm not going to do that. But it's a very modernistic kind of art. You know, doesn't make any sense to me. Plus, in the Middle East, like I say, the guy will work for revenge. You know, in history, it depends whether you're, what kind of civilization you have. If you show mercy, you know, to your enemies, sometimes it works. In the American Civil War, when the war was over, it's very famous at Appomattox. And General Grant said to Lee, you know, I'll let you guys go, keep your horses, keep everything. You know, let bygones be bygones. And it kind of worked. When the United States defeated Germany and Japan at the end of World War II, and we occupied them, we treated them kind of nice. And it worked. Today, Germany and Japan are American allies, and they're democratic countries. So they took it in the right way. Because believe me, what the Japanese and the Germans did to their prisoners in World War II, you all know, they were monsters. We didn't treat them that way. We said, you know, we'll act civilized towards you. So, I mean, I get that. Sometimes it works. They didn't use the opportunity to go and organize another war against America. But in the Middle East, it doesn't work. This is the whole fight they're having now about the ceasefires. People said, let there be ceasefires and peace talk. The other side just wants to kill you. You know, how do you have a ceasefire in that kind of situation? I mean, really, how do you have a ceasefire in that kind of situation? And so, like I say, to say, you know, they treat him nicely or something like that, by Yachmo, doesn't work. Saul could not have been that clueless, right? There are those who say, there's a medrash, actually. If you look in the Akash Shimoni, that Saul was persuaded this way by Doeg Adomi. In other words, even though it says, Vayachmo Saul v'ha'am, they say ha'am means one person who is shokol kenega klal Yisrael. You know, that way. Okay. You know. I think they say, I mean, why do they say that? I think, this is my opinion. The reason they say this, because later on, Doeg Adomi wipes out Novi Arkohanan. Right? This is the classic Chazal that says if you're merciful to the merciless, you'll be merciless to the merciful. So the same guy, Saul, who was merciful to Agag, was merciless to the Kohanim of Nov, even though they didn't deserve to be killed. I'm sure you know that one. But it doesn't quite work because Saul's not merciful. If you wipe out an entire nation and leave one guy alive, a single guy alive, you can't tell me it's being merciful. Like I say, I don't get it. There is an old, in the Apocrypha, by the way, they have a great vart. I don't know if it's true. Depends on a lot of factors. And it goes like this. He left Agag alive for a day. And as you know, Agag got somebody pregnant that night before he died. Okay. They often talk about it in terms of Haman. You know, called Haman Huagogi. But listen to this. In the Apocrypha literature, which is not part of the Bible, of course, King Saul seems to have been killed by an Amalekite or something like that, because there are two versions of how Saul gets killed. One is Shmuelov and one is Shmuelbeis. And Shmuelov, he kind of like, you know, just commits suicide because he's surrounded by the enemy. And in the other one, an Amalekite comes to David and says, I finished him off at his request. So if that's true, Saul was killed by an Amaleki, which is kind of funny, because why would it be an Amaleki? But then you say like this, according to the Apocrypha, that Amaleki was the son of Agag. That's like very, you know, Greek tragedy. You let the father live an extra day, his son took revenge on him. You see? But that's not in the Chazal or anything. So, all I can say is, the same Doeg who said, let this guy live, is the same Doeg who later on, when the officers of King Saul refused to kill the Kohanim of Nob, look it up. Doeg did it. Right? And at the same time, he's supposed to have been a big Talmud Chacham, you know, in the Gemara and in Sanhedrin. So, again, it's a strange Haftorah in that particular regard. Now, I'll tell you what's interesting. Besides that, in the Gemara, in Megillah, there's a famous question. Hold on for a second. Yeah, here it is. In Megillah, Tesvav, Beis. It's a Tanur Rabban, Ma Rosa Esther, Shezimna, Es Haman. It's a famous brisa. Many of you have heard of it. What was Esther's motive when she said, I want the king and Haman to come to the party? Why Dafka Haman? And there's all kind of opinions. One says, Pachim Tamlo, Reb Lezer says, she was planning to trap him. One is really dramatic. She said, if nothing else works, I'll make a pass at Haman. The king will get enraged and kill the both of us, and I'll take that mamzer down, even if it costs my life, like Samson and the Philistines. But Rabbi Yeshua says, why does she bring Haman? Mi base avi alomda, shenem mi mroim sonacha hachile alechem. There is a pasuk in Mishlei that says, try to be like Grant and Lee in Appomattox. If your enemy is hungry, give him to eat. Give him food. Now let's try to appeal to the good side. Try to be liberal about it. Where'd she learn that? Mi base aviha. What does that mean, base aviha? And Rashi says, Shama Hatinogos Omrin Kane. She heard that in school. Okay. I think it means if you hold that it was a chemla, a shawl spared Agag out of this weird sense of mercy, although he killed everybody else. So again, that doesn't make any sense to me. Mi beis Aviv, Queen Esther is descended from Saul, correct? Because she was related to Mordechai. Mordechai ben Yair ben Kish. Ishimidian. Kish is, Shaul ben Kish. Right? Kish was the father of Shaul. So apparently she had some tradition, weirdly, in her family. Mi beis Aviv Lamda. She had some tradition in her family that, you try to be nice to your foe. Now, that's not all she did. Esther did not make the mistake of Saul. She also had other things as well. Because, you remember this, Gemara? There were like 5 or 6 or 7 different opinions what her motive was. One of them was very cynical, that she figured cannot to besarm, that by inviting him, she'll get everybody else jealous of him and alienate him that way, which worked. Gemara says it worked. And it says that Ashke Rabba Avoy L'Eliyob, one of the rabbis ran into Eliyahu Navi, says, you tell me, what was the pshat? And he says, K'chula t'nayu k'chula t'amori. All of these opinions are right. So Esther was juggling 10 or 12 balls at the same time. And when she invites Haman, she has like a whole bunch of motives. So she wasn't like Shaul, who just simply said, let's try mercy. She also had plans that if necessary, she'll die with him, or she'll trap him, or she'll make him over proud and he won't notice what's happening around. However you interpret that, Bryce, there's a whole bunch of very interesting opinions. Kekula Tanayi Kulamari means she had a lot of different plans at hand at the moment, which is interesting. But one of them was try to be nice. One of them is try to be chemla. Of course, it didn't work. We're not told at the party any details of Esther except the fact that she says, Ish sarva oyev haman ara zeh. But, so we don't know all the other conversations that went on. But apparently, she must have tried to appeal to his merciful side, which didn't exist. And same thing with Agag. So we end up with a story that we all know it, but it's hard to us now, thousands of years later, to make sense of it. What kind of a chemla is it when you kill out a person's entire family and neighborhood and city and country, the whole business, and you leave that person alive? How is that a vort in chemla? So I don't have really a good answer to that, but I do want to throw it out. Maybe some of you do. I think this year, this is the most interesting. One second here. I think it's the most interesting aspect of the Haftarah. Yep. And it's a push-up shot question. And if anybody has a good idea, which I doubt, then you can email me. Anyway, I thought I'd throw that out, especially in light of the current war going on and questions of humanity and humane warfare and all the rest of it. I'm sure every rabbi in the world will speak from the pulpit on something along these lines this Shabbos. But I do want to thank the Beers for sponsoring this. And again, maybe someone will step forward for the Parsha. I wish everybody a good week.